is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. And now we enlighten you with verses 162 to 165 of chapter Al-An'am from the Holy Quran, recited by Murtaza Fatemi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Qul inna salati wa nusuki wa mahyaya wa mamati lillahi rabbil alameen la sharika lah. وبذلك أمرت وأنا أول المسلمين قل أغير الله أبغي ربا وهو رب كل شيء ولا تكسب كل نفس إلا عليها ولا تزر وازرة وزر أخرى ثم
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Say, surely my prayer and my sacrifice and my life and my death are all for Allah, the Lord of the worlds. No associate has He, and this am I commanded, and I am the first of those who submit. Say, what shall I seek, a Lord other than Allah? And He is the Lord of all things, and no soul earns evil but against itself, and no bearer of burden shall bear the burden of another. Then to your Lord is your return, so He will inform you of that in which you differed. And He it is who has made you successors in the land and raised some of you above others by various grades, that He might try you by what He has given you. Surely, your Lord is quick to requite evil, and He is most surely the forgiving, the merciful.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Our headlines. The U.S. president says any extension to a deadline for evacuating from Afghanistan risks new attacks against foreign troops. China says the U.S. Army and its partners must be held accountable for violating human rights in Afghanistan. Also, Brazil reports a sharp rise in its daily coronavirus tally, registering some 31,000 new cases and nearly 900 additional deaths in 24 hours. Thank you for joining us. Beginning with our top story, the U.S. president says the evacuation of foreign troops and citizens from Afghanistan is expected to complete before the August 31st deadline.
First, on evacuation, we agreed that we will continue to close cooperation to get people out as efficiently and safely as possible. We are currently on a pace to finish by August the 31st. The sooner we can finish, the better. Each day of operations brings added risk to our troops.
Joe Biden said any extension to the deadline risks new attacks against the foreign troops and civilians at Kabul Airport. He noted that the completion of the evacuation operations depends on how much the Taliban are willing to cooperate. The U.S. president, however, said he has asked the Pentagon to come up with contingency plans if the departures do not complete by the deadline. This followed a virtual meeting of G7 leaders on the developments in Afghanistan. They expressed support for the United Nations to coordinate humanitarian efforts in the region, which faces an influx of Afghan refugees.
Aside from the money, it is also a question of logistics, as Afghanistan has no civilian airport at the moment. And you can imagine what this means in regards to the transportation of medicines and other similar goods. And this is another reason why it is vital that we get a civilian airport in Afghanistan as soon as possible, where aid could be transported.
Angela Merkel said Germany will donate 100 million euros in immediate aid for humanitarian purposes and a further 500 million later on. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson said the G7 leaders have agreed on a roadmap for engaging with the Taliban. He stressed the need to press the Taliban to ensure women's rights and prevent Afghanistan from turning into what he called a breeding ground for terror and a narco state. The developments come as the Taliban have rejected any extension of the August 31st deadline for U.S. and other foreign troops to completely withdraw from Afghanistan. Our correspondent in Washington, D.C., Colin Campbell, says the responsibility of the U.S. failures in Afghanistan doesn't rest entirely upon President Joe Biden alone.
Do you have the intelligence which gives you some understanding of where the Afghan troops are and what the the groupthink is really inclined towards. And then you have members of the Pentagon who do provide other types of intelligence. You have a foreign policy advisory team. And then you have the president himself who makes the ultimate decision. And when you have failures at all different levels, you get this culmination of a giant failure and a massive failure in foreign policy that we saw coming from the Biden administration. Let's not be fooled. Yes, the president is at the top, but it isn't just him making these decisions. He does have advisors who are telling him the best direction to go, or in their best opinion or expertise, which direction that the U.S. should go in. And then the president makes the ultimate decision on top of that. He does have the power to negate anything that his generals are saying, but he is advised by them. So this is a blunder not just by the president, but the president's administration, including the president.
Russia says Washington is trying to convince several Central Asian countries to take in U.S. troops for possible attacks against Afghanistan.
Americans withdrawing from Afghanistan wanted to place parts of their infrastructure, arms, and troops on the territory of the neighboring countries so that if needed, Afghanistan could be attacked from there if it behaves badly. That's what this is about. But if you think that any country in Central Asia or elsewhere is interested in becoming a target so that the Americans could fulfill their initiatives, I really doubt it.
Sergei Lavrov said his country was ready to mediate in Afghanistan. He said it was regrettable that the European Union fears that the fall of Kabul to the Taliban is a victory for Moscow and Beijing. He said such remarks show that the bloc is obsessed with playing politics and is uninterested in the fate of ordinary Afghans. Meanwhile, China said the U.S. Army and the militaries of other coalition partners should be held accountable for alleged rights violations they committed in Afghanistan. Well, much is made of the so-called special relationship between the U.K. and the U.S. Both countries have many of the same interests, and both are strong proponents of promoting liberal democracy and free trade around the world, often by force. But this month's unilateral decision by the U.S. to withdraw its troops from Afghanistan has exposed the shakiness of the decades-long transatlantic relationship. Saeed Pourreza takes a closer look.
A special relationship, a term coined after the Second World War by then-British Prime Minister Winston Churchill to describe his country's close bilateral ties with former colony the U.S., from economic to cultural to military. Decades later, that supposed strong bond seems to exist in all but name.
It was never special. We already discussed the Suez crisis where the U.S., you know, basically told Britain to get out of the way, slapped it aside like a little child, a recalcitrant child. Tony Blair was the last British Prime Minister who really put a lot of political capital into this so-called special relationship. The price has been thousands of British soldiers killed, over 457 in Afghanistan alone.
Successive U.S. presidents have dealt serious blows to this transatlantic alliance, from Ronald Reagan, who ordered the invasion of Grenada, a Commonwealth country, when Margaret Thatcher was at number 10, the supposed acme of the special relationship, all the way to Trump and now Biden, who ordered the Afghanistan pullout without consulting the U.K.
It gives lie to the idea that there ever was a special relationship. It only existed in the deluded minds of British mandarins and British political elites, because they felt they still wanted to feel that Britain was a great power, and that they, even though they didn't have an empire, they still retain an empire state of mind. And that is now being blown right out of the water with the fall of Afghanistan.
In a sign of heightened tensions, the reaction from a man who got the UK involved in US-led wars in Afghanistan and later Iraq, and is a great believer in this special relationship. He has called Biden's decision imbecilic.
A policy can't be decided by slogan. It's got to be decided on the basis of a strategy. And that's a different thing. And that's really the purpose of what I was saying.
With or without a strategy, it's happening. As U.S. troops evacuate defeated, so must their British peers. Just as they went into the country in September 2001. The Taliban have ruled out any extension of the occupation.
If they are intent on continuing the occupation, so it will provoke a reaction.
The exit from Afghanistan is a chaotic one, and the fury at number 10 over being ignored and humiliated is palpable, offering a window into the state of the UK-US relations.
Theirs is a special relationship perennially skewed in Washington's favor, and where junior partner, the UK, plays the role of obedient sidekick. Said Puriza, London.
Brazil reports nearly 31,000 new coronavirus cases, marking a sharp rise from the previous day tally of around 13,000. Brazilian health officials also logged just under 900 new deaths, more than twice the number of fatalities reported on Monday. The country's overall caseload now exceeds 20.6 million, while its death toll is approaching 576,000. Brazil has the second most COVID-19 fatalities in the world, following the United States. Meanwhile, Mexico has posted 940 new coronavirus deaths and over 18,000 new infections. The country has recorded more than 254,000 fatalities and over 3.24 million cases since the pandemic reached it. That is while Australia has recorded its highest daily number of coronavirus cases since the start of the pandemic, as a Delta outbreak rages there. The infections at 919 were reported in Australia's most populated state, New South Wales. Officials have warned against growing pressure on hospitals in highly affected areas, mainly in the state's capital city, Sydney. They've also called for accelerating vaccinations to curb the surge. The Delta variant has increased infections and hospitalizations in Sydney despite nearly 2 months of lockdown there. The strain has also affected other major cities like Melbourne, prompting restrictions and lockdowns. Police have been deployed in some areas to help enforce the curbs, as some people are angry at the restrictions. Iran's parliament is studying the qualifications of the proposed lineup of Ebrahim Raisi's cabinet. The debates come as part of a vote of confidence process that's slated to conclude by Wednesday. Our correspondent Yusuf Jalali has been in parliament and filed this report.
4 days, 8 work shifts of marathon debates in Iran's parliament to review President Raisi's 19 proposed ministers. And yet, the process is not over. On Tuesday, the proposed ministers of culture, science and interior were up for debate. Based on the parliament regulation, 2 supporting and 2 opposing lawmakers speak for or against the nominees. The ministers to be then have 30 minutes to defend their qualifications.
Our youth are grappling with unemployment. Our people are living in economic difficulties, and the coronavirus has exacerbated these problems. We need to form a new cabinet that's capable of addressing all these issues, and the change starts here in Parliament from our careful studying of the proposed ministers.
Since day one of the vote of confidence sessions on Saturday, legislators have examined the credentials of 16 out of 19 nominees. This as the whole process was slated to conclude on Tuesday with a voting session. Lawmakers say they're trying to be meticulous in examining the credentials of the proposed cabinet members, and that has made the process to take longer than planned.
We went based on the plan, but we decided to hold one more session on Wednesday to review the qualifications and plans of the nominees with better care and precision. So we definitely wrap up the process on Wednesday.
We needed more time to examine the plans, the experiences and capabilities of each of the proposed ministers. We are the representatives of our people and have to be meticulous to prevent unqualified people from holding sensitive posts.
Ebrahim Raisi handed his proposed cabinet lineup to Parliament on August 12th, a week after he took the oath of office as Iran's new president. The vote of confidence process is now expected to wrap up with a 24-hour delay on Wednesday, when MPs will vote for or against the nominees. While the final voting is yet to be held in Parliament, we can tell from 4 days of debates that the cabinet lineup will not undergo major changes. Still, we have to wait until late Wednesday to learn who has and who hasn't won Parliament's go-ahead to sit in the ministerial chairs. Yusuf Jalali from Iran's Parliament.
Foreign-backed militants have started leaving one of their last hideouts in Syria's Daraa province under a Russian-brokered truce deal. Earlier, we were joined by our Damascus correspondent, Mohammed Ali, who gave us the details.
Today, the first batch of terrorists have left Daraa al-Balad, an area they occupy in southern Syria. Daraa al-Balad is part of Daraa governorate city in general, and they have left just today. The number of armed men who left are only 10. they left towards northern Syria, namely Idlib. This is, of course, the first step to be implemented in a deal negotiated for over a month and failed so many times. But today, the exit of those terrorists signal perhaps the first part, the success of the first part of this negotiation deal between the Syrian security forces and, of course, the terrorists inside Daraa al-Balad. Of course, there have been negotiations between the two sides mediated by Russia. They left this evening, and it is expected that there will be more batches to leave from Daraa al-Balad. Those terrorists who are leaving are the ones who are against this reconciliation deal, reconciliation inside Daraa al-Balad.
King Abdullah II of Jordan has become the first Middle Eastern leader to meet with Russian President Vladimir Putin since the Taliban takeover of Afghanistan. Russia hasn't recognized the Taliban, but is engaged in official talks with them. Marina Kurtunova reports.
The Russian President Vladimir Putin held a meeting with King Abdullah II of Jordan on the sidelines of the Army 2021 forum. The monarch arrived in Russia not only to inspect new models of technology, but also to discuss the situation in Syria and Afghanistan. In his welcoming speech, the king said that Russia has always been the element of stability in the region, given the difficulties it faced.
But I think more important, as you alluded to, sir, is the challenges that we have in Syria, which you play, I think, the most stable role in being able to move that process forward. Again, your historic role on the Middle East peace process, having met the new Israeli government, I believe that we can be back to talking about how to improve the lives of the Palestinians. But again, with the strong role that you played in that particular aspect, the chance of maybe getting the Israelis and Palestinians at least start talking to each other.
Experts believe this means that Russia is again expected to play a similar role. The monarch is one of the influential U.S. allies in the Middle East, and his words could have weight in the White House.
The situation in the Syrian province of Daraa is important now for Jordan, which wanted security assurances and hope for a stabilization of the situation in the area. I think that the Russian side has provided clarifications regarding Russia's position on this issue. Another important topic of the talks was the military technical community, Palestine, and the situation in Afghanistan, where both countries can successfully interact.
King Abdullah is the first Middle Eastern leader to meet with Putin after the Taliban seizure of power. The king spoke about Afghanistan, noting that there are difficulties. He can be understood. The world still does not know how to deal with the Taliban and the takeover. On the eve of the meeting, Putin made it clear that he was seriously concerned about the situation with refugees from Afghanistan who might end up in Central Asia.
We have common borders with post-Soviet republics and there are no visa restrictions. Imagine refugees entering all these countries. Who are among these refugees? How do we know? There may be thousands or even hundreds of thousands of them, and maybe millions. And we have no visa restrictions with our closest allies and neighbors, and the border is 1,000 kilometers. And what are we going to do about it? This is directly related to the security of Russia. This is directly connected with our citizens.
On Monday, Putin discussed the situation in Afghanistan with the leaders of Belarus, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan, and Armenia. They expressed concern about the presence of the Daesh terror group in Afghanistan.
Russia is not expected to interfere in the events in Afghanistan. It has not recognized the Taliban, but it has not evacuated its embassy staff. Moscow says it continues to monitor how events develop in this regard. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
And with that report, we come to the end of this edition of World News.
With you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Thank you.
onto our website, www.parstoday.com/en. Supplication on Wednesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate, praise belongs to Allah who appointed the night to be a garment, and sleep for a rest, and day he appointed for a rising. To thee belongs praise, for thou roused me from my sleep. And hadst thou willed, thou wouldst have made it everlasting, an everlasting praise that will never be cut off, and whose number the creatures will never count. O Allah, to thee belongs praise, for thou created, then proportioned, and ordained, and decreed, and gave death, and bestowed life, and made sick and healed, and made well and afflicted, and sat upon the throne and encompassed the kingdom. I supplicate thee with the supplication of one whose mediation is weak, whose stratagems have been cut off, whose term has drawn near, whose expectation from this world has shrunk, whose neediness for thy mercy has intensified, whose remorse for his neglect has become great, whose slips and stumbles have become many, and whose repentance is devoted sincerely to thy face. So bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and his household, the good, the pure. And provide me with the intercessions of Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, and deprive me not of his companionship. Surely thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, decree for me on Wednesday four things. Induce me to be strong in obedience to thee, to be joyful in worshipping thee, to be desirous of thy reward, and to abstain from that which would make incumbent upon me thy painful punishment. Thou art gentle to whom thou wilt.
As the U.S. government is left scrambling, watching its $2.2 trillion war effort turn out to have meant nothing, and seeking to pick up the pieces, it is now behaving very dangerously. The U.S. may not have a physical presence inside of Afghanistan in the future, But the fear is that its economic sanctions may end up being more deadly than its armed forces, says Robert, an English journalist, in an article titled Freezing Afghanistan's Wealth. The U.S. scrambles to hit hard with soft power. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. In keeping with the U.S. administration's pledge to withdraw from America's 20-year war, in one of the poorest countries on Earth, the U.S. regime has yet to present any plan for future relations with Afghanistan, as it is reportedly scrambling to freeze Kabul's wealth for fears of it falling into the hands of the Taliban. In the midst of the sudden collapse of Afghanistan's government and the subsequent return to power of the Taliban recently, the U.S. troop presence at Afghanistan's Kabul airport has reportedly increased to 4,500 strong, with a further increase planned to 6,000 in coming days. Having abandoned its embassy in the Afghan capital and vowing to maintain a presence only at the country's airport, the U.S. regime has severely miscalculated the pace at which the country was destined to fall into the Taliban control. An unnamed U.S. official speaking to the Washington Post said, any central bank assets the Afghan government have in the United States will not be made available to the Taliban. According to that same report, the U.S. administration has now frozen the assets of Afghanistan, the vast majority of which are not held inside of the nation's own borders. Some 80% of Afghanistan's annual budget is currently funded by the United States and other foreign governments, which may well end now that the Taliban have seized control of the country. In alignment with sanctions in place against the Taliban and Executive Order 13,224, any dealings with the Taliban are prohibited. Executive Order 13,224 was signed by then-President George W. Bush in the wake of the September 11th attacks and was said to have been designed to restrict financing to U.S.-designated terrorist organizations. This means that for one of the poorest countries on the planet, it may now be even more difficult to bring in international humanitarian aid at a time when the ongoing refugee crisis is expected to escalate. On May 6, 2019, the UN Human Rights Council, commenting on the implementation of sanctions against Iran, Venezuela, and Cuba, stated that the use of economic sanctions by the U.S. government for political purposes violates human rights and the norms of international behavior. It also warned that such actions threaten creation of man-made humanitarian catastrophes of unprecedented proportions. Over the past two decades, successive U.S. administrations have fueled their project in Afghanistan, working to build an Afghan military 300,000 strong, armed with some of the latest in U.S. military equipment. Between 2001 and 2019, the U.S. regime spent $133 billion on its nation-building efforts in Afghanistan. Taliban now seems to be taking a more pragmatic approach to politics, showing themselves to be more calculated than they previously were. Yet, skepticism is still high as to whether the group will carry through with pledges to maintain peace and to respect the rights of women. Thank you. as the U.S. regime is left scrambling, watching its $2.2 trillion war effort turn out to have meant nothing, and seeking to pick up the pieces, it is now behaving very dangerously. Having utilized the U.S. Air Force against the Taliban during the past month, now holding back the wealth of Afghanistan, the U.S. regime is taking a much more aggressive approach than that of its rivals. The U.S. regime may not have a physical presence inside of Afghanistan in the future, but the fear is that its economic sanctions may end up being more deadly than its armed forces. This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/EN. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. Lantern of Ufa.
My name is Alimov Mohammed Mostafavich. I was born on March 26, 1951. My parents were simple farmers, but we, their children, were all educated. We finished our education thanks to state support. I finished my primary school, which lasted 7 years, in my village. The instruction language there was the Tatar language. I pursued my education at a center called Eric The instruction language there was Russian. Then I attended the State University of Bashkortostan. After 7 years of studying, I received my degree in pediatrics. Then I went to the State University of Ufa. I wrote up my thesis and received my Doctor of Medicine there. It was God's grace that for the first time in 1980, a religious school was opened in Ufa, the capital city of the Republic of Bashkortostan, Russia. It was directed by my great teacher, Talat Tajuddin. I studied at the school for 2 years. After I finished my studies there, Mr. Tajuddin did not allow me to leave the office of clerics. I was his secretary and program manager for 3 years during his term as head of the office of clerics for Russian Muslims. Over the few years I was working there, I realized that I had little knowledge about Islam. Therefore, with my teacher's permission, Mr. Tajuddin, I decided to study at the University of Erciyes in Turkey.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
I studied there for 5 years and began to work in Istanbul for various TV channels and newspapers. Little by little, I began to learn how to produce and edit programs with Islamic themes. After I came back home from Turkey, the Republic of Bashkortostan and the municipality of Ufa gave the local Muslims an old derelict cinema building as a gift. It took us 23 years to turn the building into a modern mosque. We took out trucks of stones, tree branches, etc. before we began turning it into a mosque. The mosque is called Ikhlas Mosque. Little by little, profound changes were made to the mosque's inner and outer spaces. Its minarets reach 41 meters in height. A Persian proverb goes, "A mosque without minarets is like a bride without dowry." It made me decide to build two tall minarets for our mosque. We are completing the mosque with the help of Ufa residents. Actually, Ufa is sort of an Islamic center in the whole of Russia. We are living in the Republic of Bashkortostan, Russia. We are living in our own country, in our own homeland. And this is God's grace that we are serving the people at Ikhlas Masjid. Ikhlas Mosque mirrors the manners of Ufa's Muslims.
Allahu Akbar. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Over the past 2 decades since Ikhlas Mosque opened its doors, waves of people have been moving towards us. We take pride in it. This shows that our all-out efforts have paid off. As the proverb goes, "Tell me what you have done as a religious deed, and I will tell you the power of your religion." We're changing Ikhlas Mosque's decor according to the Iranian religious painting and calligraphy. you stop working as a physician, and how did you get so involved in religion? Well, the answer is not as simple as the question itself is. I was born into a Muslim family. I was familiar with Islam to some extent. I inherited this familiarity from my parents and grandparents. When I received my degree in medicine, I started studying religious books. It does not necessarily mean that I stopped working as a physician. By the way, I forgot to tell you the story of taking the old cinema building. When I went to the municipality and asked for the building, my request was turned down. Then I decided to meet with the mayor. I told him that I was the host of Ikhlas program and that I had studied religion and that I was also the producer of the program. He said, "How interesting, because my mother and I watch the program every week." He was happy to see me in person. By then, I had been producing the program for several years. The meeting was successful, and the mayor agreed to give the building to us. He was a respectable man.
Сегодня мы собрались, чтобы вместе отметить одно из...
At a meeting with religious groups in Ufa, Mr. Vladimir Putin said that Islam is the glowing face of Russian society and that Islamic foundations have the right to promote their religion. We decided to impart what we had learned about our religion in other countries, what was suitable for the Muslims of our city. One of them was founding the Islamic choir, which we had seen in Turkey. Among other things done at Ikhlas Mosque, one is that people come to the mosque and ask us to recite for them from verses of the Holy Quran. They usually ask for this when they want to celebrate a happy event or to get a peace of mind, when they are sad or worried, or when they miss their deceased loved ones. We have various activities at this mosque, including the naming ceremony, which is a popular ceremony. To name their children, many people from different parts of Ufa come over to our mosque. Another ceremony at our mosque that many people like very much is the wedding ceremony. It is performed at our mosque.
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar.
After every wedding ceremony or naming ceremony, we give the couple or the parent a paper as the marriage or birth certificate. We have built a studio at our mosque. Our program called Ikhlas is produced there. I am the director, host, and founder of the program, which is broadcast on local channels. We are doing our best to produce a high-quality program, both in terms of form and content. The program has many fans across the country, especially in Ufa. In this program, we try to show the lives and cultures of Muslims in the Republic of Bashkortostan, Russia, and other Muslim countries such as Iran.
Iran Respublikasının manevi yüreği bulgan Kum şehrinde.
Here we have international activities as well, including sending Muslims on the Hajj pilgrimage or Jerusalem al-Quds in the occupied territories. We have also visited religious centers in Finland, Poland, and Egypt. Moreover, we have made a good connection with Iran and visited the holy site of Mashhad. Here I would like to say that if you have missed out on visiting Mashhad, you have in fact missed out on visiting half of the world. Each of us is supposed to live a rational life in this world. Right now, I'm standing by a flower that's known in Russia as the Tartaric flower. This flower has a story that dates back to the old times. In the Tatar language, this thorny bush, which is crowned with a beautiful flower, is called Chainish Gila Gold, which literally means a thorny bush with a flower, or a flower with a thorny bush. It's called the Tartaric flower in Russia. There might be a reason for it to be called that. Perhaps my people can live under any circumstances, can grow and survive under any circumstances, can weather all kinds of problems. The Tartaric flower can grow in any place across Russia under any circumstances. It is both beautiful and has medical properties too. The flower can survive famine and cold. By the same token, since the Tatars are hardworking people, they have managed to survive throughout history. This village is the source of activities. It's the source of our art and culture. Generally speaking, the village is where the country begins. We have great respect for our village's name. Bayazidov, our village's name, means a rich man, a man who has enough money to live with ease. The Muslim people here have had close relations with Iranian culture. In the Tatar language, there are many words coming from the Persian language. Our village's name would certainly have to do with the great Iranian mystic, Bayezid Bastami. In our village, proverbs related to Bayezid are commonly used, and the locals know by heart all the proverbs and stories related to him. I take pride in the people of my village. Over the past century, numerous scientists, religious scholars, and engineers have come from this village. According to the great mystic Bayezid Bastami, the earth would cover our bodies after death, but it cannot cover our sins. Bayezid offers us a set of rules by which we can conduct a decent life in this difficult world. I pray for my nation to enjoy God's grace, to enjoy peace and happiness in their families, and to enjoy a good life on earth. In the past, it used to be said that if a village has no mosque, the people of that village are not pious enough. Thank God, since the very beginning, that's about 350 years ago, the village has had a mosque or a place for worship. Right now, I'm going up the stairs of our village's mosque. This mosque was built 25 years ago with the will and determination of the village's youths and the support of the village's elderly. The mosque is my home. I see no difference between the mosque and my home. This is both my home and God's home. I'm here from dusk to dawn. The home I'm living in is both my home and God's home because I have devoted my soul, life, breath, wisdom, and knowledge to the betterment of Ikhlas Mosque. The mosque's name is after a chapter in the Holy Quran with the same name. This is part of our moral tradition, and I take pride in it. Our people know that our God, Allah, is one and our Prophet is Muhammad, peace be upon him. And our holy book is the Quran, and all of us face in the same direction when we say our prayers.
In the limelight. Disruption to the global supply chains linked to the coronavirus pandemic and Brexit have also triggered shortages of raw materials in the United Kingdom. Economists have warned that sustained supply chain problems and staff shortages could push up inflation as companies seek to pass on higher production costs onto consumers. We'll prepare for you an article by Richard Partington, under the heading, UK's COVID recovery slows amid staff and material shortages. The article has been published by the British newspaper The Guardian. Britain's economic recovery from lockdown has slowed sharply in the past month despite the removal of most remaining pandemic restrictions as businesses suffered the worst shortages of workers and materials in decades. The latest snapshot from IHS Market and the Chartered Institute of Procurement and Supply showed that growth in private sector output slowed to a six-month low in August. Problems with hiring workers and shortages of materials were 14 times higher than usual, and the worst since the survey of business activity began back in January of 1998. Separate figures from the Confederation of British Industry, CBI, showed British manufacturers suffering from the worst problems with stocks of components and raw materials in August since the business lobby group started tracking industrial production in April of 1977. UK officials claimed factory output remained resilient by historical standards in the 3 months to August, with activity driven by food, drinks, and tobacco producers. However, weakness in car production, where manufacturers have struggled with global shortages of microchips, dragged on growth. Alpesh Palaya, the CBI's principal economist, said many firms were feeling the pinch from the supply chain distribution. Palaya said, despite the rebound in activity, ongoing disruptions could choke off future manufacturing growth. It's therefore vital that businesses and the government continue to work together to smooth over some of the frictions in supply chains and the wider sector until activity settles back down to normal levels. Thank you. sign that economic recovery from lockdown is losing momentum. The IHS Market and the Chartered Institute of Procurement and Supply Flash Purchasing Managers Index dropped to 55.3 in August from 59.2 in July. Any reading above 50 indicates expansion. It comes despite the easing of most remaining pandemic restrictions on 19th of July. Chris Williamson, the chief business economist at IHS Market, said raising coronavirus infections were deterring consumer spending, while businesses were struggling with acute supply shortages. Chris Williamson added, the number of companies reporting that output had fallen due to staff or material shortages has risen far above anything ever seen previously in more than 20 years of survey history. He added, in manufacturing, sectors including automotive production and electrical goods have fallen into decline due to mainly supply constraints. Job vacancies across the United Kingdom have risen to record levels in recent months, while many firms have been forced to temporarily close or reduce production after staff were pinched by the NHS COVID app. Disruption to global supply chains linked to the pandemic and Brexit have also triggered shortages of raw materials in the United Kingdom. Economists have warned that sustained supply chain problems and staff shortages could push up inflation, as companies seek to pass on higher production costs onto consumers. The IHS Market Survey of 1,300 manufacturers and service sector companies, which is tracked by the Bank of England and the Treasury for early warning signs from the economy, showed employment rising at the fastest rate since the survey began. Firms responding to the survey said there was growing pressure to raise wages in the hunt for new recruits. There were also widespread reports that rising shipping costs and shortages of raw materials had led to intense price pressures. However, the rate of inflation for input costs eased to a four-month low in August, while factory gate prices rose at the slowest pace since May. Duncan Brock, a group director at CIPS, said the shortages were beginning to feed through into higher wages and increased shipping costs. He said an abnormally large slowdown in overall activity in August offers a stark warning to the UK economy that the accelerated levels of growth we've seen earlier this summer are not sustainable. Figures published earlier on Monday, 23rd of August, showed a similar picture in the Eurozone, although private sector activity managed to remain at stronger levels than in the United Kingdom, despite widespread supply chain delays. This pulled markets flash composite PMI for the Eurozone down to 59.5 in August from a record high of 60.2 in July. Samuel Toombs, the chief UK economist at the consultancy Pantheon Macroeconomics, said UK goods export orders grew at a significant slower pace than in the Eurozone for the 8th consecutive month. He said, this highlights that Brexit has impeded the British economy's recovery. Private sector output in the US economy also slowed sharply in August, as supply constraints held back growth in the so-called world's biggest economy. The IHS Market Flash US Composite PMI fell to 55.4 in August from 55.9 in July, hitting an eight-month low. Meanwhile, according to official data, deaths from COVID-19 are now averaging 100 a day across the United Kingdom, and scientists have warned that case rates will jump again when millions of school pupils return to school next week. Figures released by Public Health England on Monday, 23rd of August, shows the seven-day average for deaths within 28 days of a positive test now stands at 100, a number that was last exceeded on 18th of March. Although the vaccination program means deaths are far below the peak of last winter, the highest daily total was 1,248, reported on 23rd of January. It is a notable rise from late May and early June, when they were consistently in single figures. Confirmed infection numbers have also started to rise once more, following a dramatic fall in mid-July, with 31,914 cases reported on Monday, 23rd of August, the seven-day average figure having increased 13% from a week before. Hospitalizations have risen from 672 on 31st of July to 948 on 17th of August. Adding to the concern is the expectation of increased infection rates when students return to school and colleges across England, Northern Ireland and Wales, which mainly happens next week. Cases in Scotland, where most school pupils went back last week, have risen dramatically, going up from 799